Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I'm here with co-host Jeff Pitino.
How are you doing?
And we are here to talk about the cosmic influence. Rarely do we actually get to say that because most of the guests we have on the show usually deal with history or hard science in one way or another. But today we have on the first astrologer that we've ever had on the show. And if we go back far enough in history, we find that astrology and astronomy are really united. They're really only separated sometime around the Renaissance. And of course, they're now very, very separated, at least in the minds of many hard scientists. But hopefully today we can talk about the connection that they had in ancient times and really get into a new way of looking at astrology. And so to introduce our guest, I'll turn it over to Jeff.
Our guest today is Marguerite Manning, and she is a professional astrologer from Washington, D.C. And her focus is really the astrology of the soul and the perspective from which we can look at astrology in terms of our kind of the karmic contributions that our soul is here to make and the debts that it's acquired and the goals that it has going forward as we move through our life or lives. And it's really her book Cosmic Karma is I just found fascinating. Was kind of
I know Jeff walked into my office this morning and said, "Walter, this stuff is right on."
Yeah, it was kind of scary accurate from what I had done is I went and found my birth chart online and just I think I was looking at it correctly and what I was reading was just like I was just like wow and this then is you, this is me.
Yeah, you crossed that with Marguerite's book.
Right.
And it hit Jeff to a T, at least as I know you, Jeff, from the outside. So Marguerite, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Walter and Jeff. I'm so honored to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. And I have to ask first how you got into this in the first place. You know, astrology is one thing. Applying it to prior lives is another thing.
It is. There was always a fascination with the stars above, thanks in a large part to the very first astronomer in my life, which was my brother in his backyard telescope, and then of course Carl Sagan later on in his wonderful series there on PBS. And as I got older, it just developed when I started to learn more about astronomy and realized that at one time the sciences of astrology and astronomy were one science, and I started becoming very interested in astrology because what I learned was that at that time, and it was an epiphany for me, that while astronomy was the study of the stars in and of themselves and how the celestial objects moved and the universe worked as a whole, astrology was basically how those movements and effects within the heavens affected us down here on Earth. And I found that to be very, very not that much different from meteorology in the sense that, you know, a meteorologist will study the influences around the planet Earth, and he doesn't stop there. I don't believe any meteorologist worth his Doppler is not going to get on and then tell you how that's going to affect us down here on Earth.
Well, that's a good point. You know, just as the Earth spins and it causes night and day, it has a real effect. And so as the Earth moves and goes around the sun, it has a huge effect, the seasons. So, too, there are no doubt larger celestial movements that have their effect over a much longer period of time.
So, and just because many of those things we can measure physically, we treat that as a science, but not the astrology. And that's why I started studying it, and I found out that really at one time it was very recognized, and later on as it came down through the centuries, and people started to rely on it even more, and these original astronomers studied both and practiced both, and a lot of the separation had to do with the church, in the sense that the church didn't, you know, while astronomy was a science and we definitely needed that to advance as a society and the world.
Well, the church and the whole Dark Age
exactly.
thing. Anyway, we need to take a little break here, and You are listening to Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
And welcome back to Cosmic Influence. Today we are talking about cosmic karma with author Marguerite Manning. Marguerite, right before the break there, we were discussing sort of where the decoupling took place, and you mentioned it was the church, and I sort of put it in the bailiwick of the Dark Ages, but somewhere along the line, astrology got muddled, and then as science was sort of rebirthing itself during the Renaissance period, it had this separation so that astronomy just meant, you know, the observed motions of the stars and trying to measure their size and mass and gravity and this sort of thing, and not looking any farther than that.
Correct.
But I'm sure as science goes farther, 100 years, 1,000 years, 5,000 years, I don't know how long it takes, but at some point we become more and more aware of these subtle influences that are going on all the time. And I'm glad that you and some others have the bravery to sort of turn the clock forward a little bit and go out on a limb and say what this science means to us.
And I think it's extremely important. And I think what a lot of people forget is that it is, in fact, a science, in the sense of the math that's involved in determining what everything means, and that in so many respects it is a physical science. But I have come to find through my experience in my work in astrology that the birth chart, like the heavens itself, is so multi-layered, and that I truly believe that, as Edgar Cayce said in his readings, that this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to find out how much more information is actually in the numbers that we're looking at every day than just what we're seeing now. And that goes for the universe as well. I think everything, like as in the universal law of oneness, I think everything is ultimately connected, creatively, physically, mentally, and spiritually. And I think until we start looking at the entire universe that way, we'll never understand the formula. We'll never get all the answers.
Well, we completely agree with you. As a matter of fact, it's by looking at things as separate that problems
exactly
tend to be created. By the way, before we kind of get into the way you use astrology, I would like to just quickly address Are you using a Western form of casting charts or a Vedic sidereal Eastern form?
I'm using the tropical Western form.
Okay.
And there's a reason for that. And it took me a while to figure it out. And I'm sure that you and Jeff will appreciate what I'm talking about based on the work that you do. Is I, for the longest time, and I say this in my book, the type of astrology I practice is karmic astrology for the soul. And the one thing I make very clear in the book is the constellations that the planets are in at the time are the soul's past. Couldn't for the life of me make that connection, why that was so obvious to me and why it worked. This is how your contract with the universe was born. That when we come into this incarnation, the way the planets are directly related to the birthplace, mathematical aspects to the birthplace, is what your contract is, what you've promised to do in this lifetime. What the constellation, the planet constellations reveal to me is your spiritual stripes from the past, where you earned your kudos before. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't line up. Astrology doesn't line up with the constellations now. And in my mind, that's why I read it the way that I do. Those constellations represent the soul's past, maybe 1,000 years ago, maybe 3,000 years ago, because quite possibly it might take quite that long to learn one of these lessons. We don't know to the universe time. I mean, our lifespan here is a blink in universal time.
Right.
So while back in 3,000, when Draconis was the pole star and astrology matched up with the constellations, that's very, very possible. someone coming into this lifetime with a Leo degree, that's when that started. That's when that age for that person and that degree started, and their education began. And it may have taken them a few lifetimes, or quite possibly this is their first lifetime since then, coming to this, as Edgar Cayce would say, this physical sphere to learn that this spiritual lesson. But it's what I find really interesting is that sidereal astrologers measure the planets against the stars, and they subtract the 24-odd degrees from all the planetary positions in the tropical calculations. And tropical astrologers, we mark the positions of the planets against the ecliptic, or the apparent path of the sun makes throughout the year. And we start the band at 0 degree Aries on the first day of spring and take off from there. But most astrologers know that it doesn't line up, and yet most astrologers believe tropical astrology is the one that works for them. I feel that it works for them because of exactly what I said, because the constellations are a representation of our past, our soul's past.
Yeah, it could. Boy, that's something I'd like to study.
That's exactly what I plan on doing, Walter. I'm so fascinated with that this is what my next book and my next research is about, is to figure out, this is the spiritual look I think that's missing from science.
Yeah, I agree. And I'd like to get into your book and Cosmic Karma, and maybe start out. I think you talked about this a little bit just now, but what exactly you mean by cosmic karma?
Okay, by cosmic karma, the day that we came into this incarnation, we've all lived before, and we'll live again. And we, prior to coming into this incarnation, we basically have a powwow with the universe and say, okay, this particular lifetime, we plan on taking on this, and this, poverty 101, parents 201, and we actually scope out a game plan for the evolution of our soul. We actually look back at what we had done prior and how we want to advance spiritually and what we want to do, and we pick out our lessons plan. We pick out where we're going to physically accomplish and materially achieve anything in this planet, where we're going to spiritually evolve, where we're going to, for instance, Pluto, where we were made to feel so powerless in our previous existence, and where in this particular lifetime we've determined that we will become powerful, hopefully without nuclear weapons, and where we will help others become powerful as well. So the universe, all that the universe does, because again, the universe doesn't get emotionally involved with our choices, but the universe does provide us with the energies, the physical and the necessary energies, to make sure that these events, these opportunities, and the correct people to make these things happen and these lessons take place come to us.
So it's all about soul growth, which I think most of us would agree with, and that assumes then that the soul is on a journey towards mastery.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think anybody that tunes into this show is probably already on that wavelength.
Right, and I think it's no different than, and I think the collective consciousness, God, the universe, or what I like to call the cosmos, I think that's that omnipresent higher power that all of us are connected to. And I don't care what we call it. We all have different ways of referring to it or gaining strength from it or calling it. But the bottom line is that it connects all of us to each other. And the only way for us to be able to tap into this universal abundance is to exercise those spiritual muscles, because that's the only way we're going to get into that collective consciousness and be able to reap its benefits.
No doubt about it. So if we're on this journey towards mastery, we all need some tips on things that we can do to better our lives, not just outwardly getting more stuff, but on becoming better people and creating a better universe. And so the way that you arrive at some guidance there, obviously, is through casting a birth chart. And tell us exactly what you go through. What's the process to kind of help a person in mastering their soul?
The first thing that I talk to them about when I cast the birth chart and I see their birth energies that they chose for this lifetime, to me it's just a matter of reminding the soul, because I think we need to be ego-driven down here on planet Earth, or we'd never get anything done. And everybody thinks, well, it would be a cinch, you know, that our souls could come down here and get it all done with their auras tied behind their back. But it's not true. They have the... our poor souls have the baggage of us, the physical ego, and we have to walk that fine line of accomplishing our material objective down here on planet Earth while still staying in touch with our spirit. And I think what happens to us is we let one take over or the other, but we never able to master that balancing act. And I think often if we let this, because the soul has a penchant for, you know, the rear view mirror and cruise control, the soul likes anything familiar, whether it be a person, a situation, or a wound. So if it runs into somebody it hasn't seen in 2,500 years, boom, it's attached. And it forgets about today's game plan. And then, you know, 10 days later, it realizes why they haven't seen that soul in 2,500 years. Maybe they weren't good for each other. But this is what I try to do, is to remind us what our initial objective was coming down here. And basically what I look at the 12th house of the natal chart to see what influences they're bringing in with them. And that's the improper programming that the soul left the past life with, as well as the gifts and talents. Most astrologers call that the house of secret sorrows and self-undoing. And I think it gets a bum rap because I think it is the house of the past. And I think the past can be our secret sorrows and self-undoing if we don't remember where it belongs. But if we acknowledge it in the broad light of day, it can become a powerful tool. And that's where I usually start. Then we move on to the sun house, where, the constellation that you came into this universe with. If you came into this universe with a degree in Leo, per se, it tells me that your soul in its most previous incarnation earned a degree in personal distinction and creative brilliance. So that's your experience in this lifetime. Your previous path of soul development was one spent learning how to expertly radiate and confidently celebrate things like life, power, love, and talent. So you're now here in this lifetime to show the rest of us how to generate and glorify those internal powers of vitality, leadership, and brilliance. So of course, everybody, you know, of course you can do those things like falling off a log. That's something you already learned how to do. It's your degree. And like any degree, those energies are yours to bring with you. You never lose them. You wake up with them every morning. But where was that sun at the moment of your birth in relationship to the earth? The house that it was in tells me what you promised the universe you were going to do with that degree. And that's the hard part of your contract. Not being a Leo, per se, or being a Gemini. I often liken it to if you wouldn't walk into the CBS newsroom and say it to 12 people sitting there, you know, how many of you have a degree in journalism? And if 11 of them raised your hand, you wouldn't turn to me and say, isn't that a coincidence? They're there because they have a degree in journalism.
Sure.
So my feeling is if you came into this incarnation with the sun in Leo, it's not a coincidence you have those traits. The sun, you actually came into this world when the sun was wending its way through that constellation because you already earned that degree. And you're now being reminded that it's your turn to use it.
So essentially, we chose to come into the universe at that particular time.
Exactly, exactly. And that's, and in other words, when that universal clock moved into position with all the energies that you chose, then boom, you had no choice. You came down. Your soul reported for earthly duty. And what I find interesting from a scientific viewpoint, to this day and age, they can clock when a woman, you know, from the day of conception when a baby is born, but they still have no handle on what creates labor. I mean, they know the chemicals in the body that kick in and why it starts, but they still do not know when, and they cannot with any degree of accuracy tell you exactly when. And I find that amazing and fascinating in a world when we can do so much else in the line of science with, you know, test tube babies and creating all this in the way of genetics and in the way of fertility. And yet here, we still don't know what makes that happen. What exactly it is that prompts that labor to take place. And there's no such thing as an accident, whether you were born by cesarean section or whether you're born because the doctor wanted to hit the golf course that afternoon.
Right.
I tell people that was what was part of the agenda.
Well, I will say my understanding is that when I was born, my doctor had been out having a couple of drinks that evening.
Well, see, now the universe stepped in and made the doctor go out and have the drink so that everything worked out where that you came in right at the time that you were supposed to, because that universal clock wouldn't have stood for anything less based on what you chose.
Well, and with that, we have to take another break. You're listening to The Cosmic Influence. We'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
And welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Bettino with our host, Walter Cruttenden, and today we're talking to Marguerite Manning, an astrologer, about her book, Cosmic Karma.
And Marguerite's website, if you'd like more information on her or her book, is www.marguerite.manning.com. So, Marguerite, we were talking about our individual contract with the universe. And I had mentioned that I really saw this a little different than the way I grew up thinking about astrology, in that we're not who we are because of an accident of our birth, but you're saying that we as a soul sort of choose what time to be born, and because we need particular qualities that the universe can give us at that particular time. Is that a good way to put it?
That's really good. And I think why people get a little bit skeptical of that is that they think that we're higher-minded enough to be able to choose the time we were born and put all this into place. And I tell them that's not what we're doing. We're choosing how we want to evolve. That part, the technical part, all the math is up to the universe. And the cosmos is, as you know, is infinite in its abilities and possibilities to bring to us exactly what we have chosen. So it knows what time we should come in. It supplies the right energies. We have decided what classes the universe makes it happen.
That's such a better way to look at life, too, you know. And more people are doing this. You hear a lot of people on the radio, as well as authors out there, that are looking at things from a soul perspective, much more than, you know, 20 or 30, 40 years ago, that's for sure.
Well, and I think that's a really interesting distinction that you pointed out, Marguerite, as well, that it's not like, oh, I choose to be born a Libra. It's
right.
I choose to learn these lessons in my next incarnation. And these are the things that I need to do in order to evolve as a spiritual being. And the rest is just, it's kind of like putting in your order and getting a number, and that's when your number comes up, that's when you go.
And the thing is, you really didn't choose to be born any sun sign. That sun sign is a reflection of what you did wonderfully in your last incarnation. So if you came in as a Libra, that's not a choice. That's a reflection that in your last time, you aced the course in partnership. You really nailed, you hit one out of the park when it came to creating mutual relationships based on equality. You're somebody who's an expert in that. You're somebody who can see both sides of every issue to the point where maybe it'll paralyze you sometimes in this life, but you can. You can see what we can't. So that's your experience. That's your expert mark. So again, that's not necessarily a choice. The constellation that each planet was in is a representational or direct reflection of what you've earned, where your soul has evolved already. And then that relationship to planet Earth tells me what you promised to do with those energies in this lifetime to evolve to the next level. So, yeah, where the planet is in direct relationship to the Earth is our choice, is a reflection of our choices. But I think what's neat about the universe is there's so much information there, and I know even much more than I'll ever glean in my lifetime, but I think this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Okay, here's a question for you.
Go ahead.
If this is our soul choosing the right circumstances, then I can understand that perspective. That sounds really good, and it just intuitively rings right. But then that sort of invalidates to me the idea that an organization, you could really tell its outcome by casting its chart, say of the United States, or of some entity that's organized or formed on a certain day.
There's all different types, right? I see what you're saying. It's Horae astrology, where you can ask a question. On that moment that the question was asked, that's Horae astrology. You cast a chart. But not really, Walter. If you think about it, it's not that really far-fetched if you think that everything has its moment of birth, of conception, everything. And based on that moment, that mathematical, scientific moment that it was came into this world, if all of us are energy, at that moment that energy formed, that it does. The universe will reflect the potential and the possibilities of it. And that's what the chart, there's nothing definite in a chart of any kind as much as it'll tell you the potential and the possibilities.
Okay, but I don't see an entity or organization having a specific individual soul, although I guess it could be something formed by a collection of souls.
Well, the thing is this, and I guess that's what I loved about the ancient astrologers, is mm-hmm. they believed everything in this universe, the planet Jupiter, this pencil, you and I, operated and vibrated on three different levels, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. And if you read any of their works or any of the way they talked about planets, and I tried to do that in my book, you would think these planets were alive. Like Saturn doesn't like this and Pluto doesn't like this because they believed it had a soul. And I think we use the term soul to mean something different than they did. Soul means you're vibrating on a spiritual level as well as a physical, as well as a mental. So I think it's our terminology of what soul means in the sense that I think soul is the thing that makes us different than everybody else. And I think inanimate objects might have one too. If we're all vibrating on a level that is physical, mental, and spiritual, everything in this universe that's energy, then maybe there is something to that.
I can agree with that. I follow Sanatan Dharma as my own religion, which is, you know, basically what's come to be known as Hinduism. But
that's what created karma. I mean, that's where karma comes from, the Hindus.
Yeah, and the idea there, too, in the Vedic teachings is that you basically have an idea, so everything exists on an ideational level, and then if you put energy into that idea, then it takes on a greater form, an astral form, you'd call it, and then the third manifestation would be a physical form. But there's the astral universe would be much larger than the physical because there's a lot more energy in things than there is just physical forms. And then, of course, the ideational or causal realms would be much larger than the astral or the physical because there's a lot more ideas that may not have manifested in an energetic or physical form. But.
Exactly, and that's the whole premise of the universal law of compensation or the law of karma, that if we are operating on all three of these levels, energy, and we put one energy out on one level, such as the physical level, because all this energy, if it is going to be creative, and this universe is divinely ordered and balanced, we put it out on one level,
We need to have our divine order and balance here. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden here with Jeff Pitino.
How are you?
We are talking with Marguerite Manning about her book, Cosmic Karma.
Now, Marguerite, in the book, you focus on the sign and then the house that the sun is in for each of us, and then specifically Saturn, Neptune, and Pluto. All right. And I wondered if you might talk about what is special about those particular celestial objects in terms of astrology as it relates to the soul.
Okay. First, to begin with, Saturn is supposed to be the taskmaster of the universe. And in ancient time, they believed that Saturn was the end of the universe. Saturn was our limitation. Saturn was the last thing in the world. So it was out there holding up the end of the world, you know, holding us all up by holding down the universe. And they felt that this was our limitation and our restriction. And that's what Saturn represents in the chart. It represents in the chart what you promised, the physical material lesson that you promised to learn in this lifetime, because Saturn, as the taskmaster, teaches us how to grow up in this lifetime. So I say in the book, it's not just our lesson, it's our grown-up ladder to success. When we can turn around and master this physical lesson in this material world, and more than often, it's usually a lesson that in our last life we didn't do so well with. We were intimidated and we were made to feel inadequate, and it had to do with something that we lacked. So if you come into this world with Saturn in your second house of material possessions, you usually come in with on a meager existence, because there's no better way to learn what value means in life than to coming into this world and having to create your own value system.
I don't know if this is connected, but I believe in mythology, Saturn is the offspring, directly or indirectly, of Kronos.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, the father of time, the sort of the time framework for the universe. So I could see how Saturn would have sort of an anchoring importance there.
Exactly, and he was not a very sweet guy, which he was pretty much a taskmaster himself, and that's what Saturn represents in the chart, because think of it this way. In those years, when it took Saturn to go 29 and a half years, that was an unthinkable orbit, because most people didn't barely live till 30 years in those days. So that was an orbit that took a lifetime. So where Saturn was in your chart, you had to work at least 29 and a half years. You had to earn it. You had to physically put the muscle into this. So I used to say where Saturn is in the chart is where you promise to work like a dog, play by the rules, and put in the time. And when you do, the success is a given. It's an absolute given because you've measured up on this physical planet. And that's what Saturn represents. And what I find fascinating, Walter, is what you brought up, too, is that so many of these ancient astronomers, the name and the title and the personality they gave to each of these planets, they still hold up today. And they, I always say that half of the time they were doing this with smoke and mirrors, trying to figure out orbits and cycles. They had no equipment. And yet everything that they came up with pretty much stands up today in the orbits. And I mean, it's very difficult for me to even find Mercury. It's so close to the horizon. And yet, and of course, there's a lot more light pollution now. But still, when you look at what they were able to determine with what little they had, and so much of it still stands up and it makes sense. To me, my feeling was they were taught by others. Maybe even us before we became us. I don't know, but they seemed to have such an incredible amount of wisdom when it came to figuring things out in the universe.
Yeah, I first saw Mercury when I was on a mountain on the West Coast. Seeing it at sunset, and it was just a nice angle to almost look down towards it, see over the horizon a little bit. Just made it easier.
I think something you just said, Marguerite, too, about how they were able to absorb these things and how it might have been knowledge passed down from beforehand as well is really interesting, especially in terms of a lot of the mythology we see in Vedic culture or in ancient Greek culture or even Mayan culture of life and humanity and civilization being a cycle of ages, if you will, with a golden age in the distant past and then a great dark age and an eventual rise up again, kind of all tied, in a lot of cases it was tied to precession itself.
Exactly.
So I thought that was really interesting what you'd mentioned.
Well, look at the pyramids. Look at how much information is there that we still haven't uncovered that ties directly to figuring out the universe above, the heavens above. And a lot of people aren't aware of it, and I'm sure both of you are, but that the Nile, the major pyramid points along the Nile are in direct correlation to major stars in the Milky Way. And that's fascinating to me.
Yeah, we just had our conference on precession and ancient knowledge, and both Graham Hancock and Robert Bovall were there, the authors of Orion Mystery. And I think it was Bovall who first made that correlation of the belt stars in Orion to the pyramids at the Giza Plateau.
Yeah.
And you can see, anyone can see, if you bring all this information together, that I think we're just getting bits of information from different directions, and one of these days, hopefully, you know, while I'm still alive, so much of it will come together that we will see how it's just a tightly woven fabric of all of this information working with each other, and
right,
that it all makes sense together.
Well, you know, for so long, there's been a lot of information there, but it's sort of been poo-pooed by Western science.
Exactly.
You really don't pay attention to ancient cultures because they were more primitive than us, and you really don't pay attention to astrology because that's just voodoo. And, more and more people are open to it a little bit. I wouldn't say the mainstream is open to it yet, but there's sure a lot of talk about it, and it's sort of the main topic at these conferences we have, how to bridge science and spirituality, and that's what we really loved about your book here when we first came across it.
Well, I appreciate that. It was just a culmination. After reading Edgar Cayce and loving astrology the way that I did, and astronomy, that brought the spiritual level into the science level for me, and it just made it all came together in my, one aha moment. And when I started practicing it that way, where I started addressing the soul in the birth chart, and no different, and I'm not a psychologist, but I say when people who do have degrees in psychology or they do have, expertise in that particular science, and they say, well, this is no different than what a psychologist would do. I say, well, I think what the psychologist is doing is talking to the soul. I think that's what the psyche is. The unconscious part of us, no matter what name you give it, is the soul. Now, whether you say, well, it stopped at this life or it lived longer, what difference does that make?
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Hi, and welcome back to The Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Pitino with our host, Walter Cruttenden, and today we are talking to astrologer Marguerite Manning. Marguerite, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jeff.
So we in the last segment we talked about Saturn being the taskmaster of the solar system, if you will, and I actually thought that was really interesting how you had mentioned that its orbit being 29 and a half years was essentially about the length of a person's life
in those days.
What about the other planets such as Neptune and Pluto? What is their influence on the soul?
Well, Neptune is a very interesting planet, and this is one of the planets that got me started on the karmic astrology. Neptune is the planet that for forever astrologers have been referring to as your destiny, where you've promised to sacrifice or suffer in the universe. And after doing the research that I've done, I have found out, and this is what I say in your contract with the universe, the reason that Neptune is the place where you tend to suffer is it's also the place where you promise to serve. It's the place where you promise to replenish the universe on a very universal level, what you took in a previous life on a very egotistical, selfish level. So while the universe isn't about reward or payback, Neptune, in a sense, is your payback because this is where you promised to turn around and replenish the universe, to balance it, to get that divine order back into the universe. What goes around comes around. You promise to replenish the universe on an emotional level. This is your emotional tour of duty. So it can't be like you hold the door for the guy with crutches over here who's your best friend, or you turn around and you hand your mother $10. This has to be to people that you don't know. This has to be on a universal level to compensate for the fact that you took on a very personal one in your last life. And the great part about Neptune is when you're not doing your Neptune house, that's when you do feel guilty. So, yes, it is a planet that makes you feel guilty, but only if you're not living up to it. And when you do, then you become your glorious spiritual best, where Saturn shows how you can be your physical most prosperous and successful on this planet. Neptune is the antithesis of that. That shows where you can really rise to the spiritual occasion and become your glorious spiritual best. That's the ultimate. And that's why Neptune is recognized as, quote, your destiny. Because when that's what we're down here to be. We're down here to learn how to become spiritually better. So when we live up to our Neptune planet, we are our spiritual best.
Let me ask you, Marguerite, how did this stuff come about in the first place? I know that Neptune was discovered in fairly recent times, or probably rediscovered if the very, very ancients knew about it. I don't know. And of course, Pluto was discovered in the 1930s, I guess it was.
Right. Pluto, there's a really great, interesting backstory to Pluto in the sense that when Edgar Cayce was being put into his trances, mm-hmm. he would be talking about a planet Septimus. And nobody knew what he was talking about. This was prior to 1930. 1930, when they discovered Pluto, he started referring to Septimus as Pluto. And Septimus, they determined, meant seventh from the planet Earth, was what he was talking about. And I talk in the book about how Pluto was discovered in 1930, and Pluto is the planet of power and death-like endings that lead the way to new beginnings. But what most people don't know, that this ninth planet in our solar system, discovered in 1930, was discovered only months after the stock market crash, setting off a worldwide economic depression, and weeks into a decade that would give us the rise of Adolf Hitler, Al Capone, and World War II.
So if some of the major planets, their influence sort of relates to mythology and very ancient culture, how did the characteristics of the more newly discovered planets, who said, well, Neptune has this quality, Pluto has this quality?
This is what's really fascinating.
Intuitive?
I think most of it had to do with the characteristics. These are people that know the universe pretty well, these astronomers and astrologers. They know the universe pretty well. They're giving the characteristics of the planet itself, realizing, again, that everything in this universe vibrates on those three levels. So based on the energy of it, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual energy that they're picking up from this planet, like Pluto, when it had gone undetected for so long, right immediately, and all these things that were happening in the world at the time it was discovered, immediately they gave it the title of Pluto, the guardian of the soul, because it's been whirling around up there for years, bringing the power of the great unknown to us, before anyone down here in the math and the science department even knew it existed. So right away, Pluto is the planet of deep down secrets, the planet that can get to the bottom of anything because nobody ever can detect it.
Okay, wearing my astronomer hat here now.
Right.
So how will Xena be treated then? You know, Xena is a...
That's a very good question.
Planet
and that's what I think a lot of...
Found to be larger than Pluto.
I think that's what a lot of people will probably... And when they first started... calling Pluto the dwarf planet, and all these astronomers are saying, well, that's going to make a difference in astrology. I came back and said, why? Why would the title of what it's being called make a difference if we're really discussing the energy of it? Why would how we see it make a difference to what it actually is? And I think that's what we're trying to figure out, what these things actually are. What actually energy they actually bring to this universe. And I think that's what there'll be so many discussions about, Xena being one. What I don't think anybody's actually gotten a handle on exactly what that energy is right now.
Yeah, you know, I have a thought here. When I was very young, I was curious what all these prophetic sciences were all about. Was there anything to them? And so I studied, read books on tea leaf reading, palmistry, numerology. Actually took a bunch of classes in that and practice it, and didn't study astrology very much, but read about it enough to, you know, just sort of understand it. And viewing all of these things, I really see them as languages to try to explain things that we can't explain otherwise.
That is exactly what I say when I talk to people. I said, we're going to wake up one day and find out that numerology, astrology, tarot, all of these are just different ways to untangle that formula to this universe. And I think I liken it to that moment I had when I was like about 6 years old and I realized that, oh, okay, 6 and 4 make 10 as well as 5 and 5. And 7 and 3 make 10 as well as 5 and 5. And I think that's what we're on the edge of right now as mankind. We're figuring out that there's more than one formula.
Yeah, and maybe Xena is a new word that as our consciousness is expanding, we need these other words, and they're coming into existence. Unfortunately, what's winding down in existence is today's show.
Oh.
And I just want to say, Marguerite, it's been such a pleasure and an honor to speak with you. And
oh, thank you. Same here. Right back at you. I really enjoyed this very much.
Thank you. It's been fantastic having you on the show.
You were both wonderful.
And Marguerite's book is Cosmic Karma, and her website is www.marguerite-manning.com. We'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
And thank you for listening to Cosmic Influence. And our guest today, Marguerite Manning, Cosmic Karma, certainly had some interesting viewpoints on astrology. And our next show will actually interview one of the foremost astronomers in the world. His name is Jeff Marcy. He's a professor of astronomy at UC Berkeley and known as the number one planet hunter in the world. So we invite you all to tune into that show.
That should be an exciting show. And once again, if at any point you'd like more information on the Cosmic Influence or our work at the Binary Research Institute, please visit us online at www.binaryresearchinstitute.org.
And in the meantime, bring on the higher ages.